following is Steve Fisher's talk, Stories of Discovery, a Responsive Journey from the 2014 Information Architecture Summit. The 2014 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by UIE's All You Can Learn. Stay tuned after the podcast for more information about All You Can Learn.
So one thing I like to do before I get going is make everyone else that's not in this room jealous, which they probably are already because they're not here with you. But let's surprise them because I know they can hear us through these walls. So on three, you're all going to cheer and clap as if something amazing has happened. Okay, you ready? One, two, three. Woo! Wow, that's the best ever. I guess I'm done here. I can go. No, we're going to have a really good time in this session. I wasn't really like a last-minute addition, but there was a bit of a program switch here. I don't know if you had noticed that, but that was a few weeks ago. But I'm really excited to tell this story. So how many of you actually read the description and know what I'm going to talk about? A boot. Good. Yeah, I'm going to talk about what a lot of people might consider a really boring project. And I looked at it and thought, oh my gosh, I get to change people's lives. I worked with a major municipality. It's almost the same size as Vancouver now. In about 5 years or so, it'll be larger than the city of Vancouver. So the 2010 Winter Olympics city, West Coast, just above Seattle. Just giving context to all the Americans in the room. No, it's interesting for me because I can make fun of America, but like truthfully, it's not like I can list all 50 of your states. Oh, yes, I can. Okay, well, we're at time, pretty much, and I want to make sure we get through this. So this is responsive discovery. Now, truth be told, it's not like you're going to learn how to build a responsive site in here. You're not going to walk away going, oh, geez, I totally have all the tools I needed now. But you're going to hear a case study where we went through a lot of the struggles, what we learned, the outcomes, and how a municipality that had well over 200 different content authors, you know, multiple stakeholder groups, all the departments, came together and found a way to move forward where they all agreed, where they could all say, this is going to work. I'm excited about this. It was a transformative project for them. Just a little bit about me. I basically am the Republic of Quality. My wife and I work together a bit, but she has her own company, Data with the Soul. So just a user experience and content strategy duo, the two of us there. This is the most exciting transition of them all. Yeah, I wish I had the Batman theme. This is me without a beard. This is new to me. So this is Hello Fisher on Twitter. Best way to get a hold of me. If you want to ask me a question, take me out for a beer, do anything, you're in Vancouver and want to go for coffee, send me a tweet and I'll respond faster than anything. This is a slightly more accurate picture of me. I forgot that shirt though. I always bring that shirt and you brought the brand tie though. This is my wife and daughter. So that's Shannon and Emma. These are my two other family members. My dogs, Sloan and Neville. I know, aww. He's 5 months old and has a broken toe. It's sad. My other dog looks like a deer. My daughter and I share a love for photography, so you have to forgive me here, but let's do this. Okay, another excitement moment. Everyone with their hands up. Ready? One, two, three. Well, you did the hands up part. One, two, three, cheer! Okay, great. Emma actually often comes to conferences with me, and she couldn't this time, which I was disappointed. She's a pretty interesting character. You'll hear a little bit more about her, because she's related to this case study. We were driving around after we moved to Vancouver, and we found this book in the back of the car that she had read cover to cover. Yeah, interesting little character. So I live in Vancouver. That's pretty much what it looks like. I cycle everywhere I go. I got hit by an SUV once, though. It was really traumatic for me. I was actually okay. Didn't manage to break any bones, just broke the frame on my bike. So now I wear a helmet to work. This is my rebuilt bike. I love to cycle around the city and take relatively dangerous photos. So there may be a correlation here. I'm not sure. No, it was his fault, not mine. If you want to know more about me or Vancouver, just go to haveaproblem.com. Okay, now let's get into this here. Why? Why even bother talking about responsive design? You know, why should it matter? And what is more difficult about it than what we've already been doing? In some ways, I envy people who are entering the industry in the last 3-4 years, because they just look at this and go, well, it makes sense. But for a lot of us, we've struggled with how to move forward. I think one of the keys that's always been true is focusing on the why first. So if you're familiar with the Golden Circle from Simon Sinek, he talks about it. It's not really his thing, though. These are principles. You know, all of us can answer what. What do you do? What's your title? User experience designer. How about you? Product manager. How about you? Information architect. We can all answer the what. That's really easy. The how is a little bit harder, right? Only 60% of us or so could answer the how because we're figuring it out. How many of you have ever been to a meeting where you nod and say, oh, we can totally do that, and you walk away from the meeting and go, oh, shit, better learn how to do that. Yeah, it happens. But then there's this why, and Simon Sinek talks about the why as being this fuzzy core, this thing that almost none of us get. He relates it back to two different computer companies or approaches, Apple Computers, Steve Jobs era, versus basically a generic PC company. He doesn't call anyone out on that. And talks about that, you know, if you're a PC company, you're building PCs for people. You're building computers. That's the what. Really easy. How? Well, we're going to source different parts and maybe work with different manufacturers and put this hardware together that people need to do their jobs. And why? Well, we're here to make money, right? That's the bottom line of that business. Totally makes sense. He talks about it from the sense of how Apple Computers portrayed itself. They wanted to think differently. They wanted to change the world, right? And so that was their why, their fuzzy core that they made clear, or that one person at least kept making clear. How? You know, they're going to single source a lot of their parts. They're going to have extreme amount of control. They're going to follow someone's vision on this. They're not necessarily going to do the things that we think that they should, right? They're going to try to innovate. And what? It's devices that have actually changed the world, right? That doesn't mean that other companies haven't changed the world with their devices, but the release of things like the iPod, which was not the best MP3 player, but the ecosystem that developed around it became amazing and led us up to the iPhone in 2007, which was not the best smartphone in development at the time. Android phones at that time could do multitasking, they just hadn't released them yet. And Steve Jobs' vision was so compelling when he talked through the iPhone that they scrapped that and started over. So I'm far more compelled to buy a product from a company that says, I want to change the world. I'm far more compelled to be involved in a project, you know, where we look at it and say, I want to change people's lives, I want to make this better, that I think our projects can be altruistic that way. But that's the same for any project. We should find out what the why is. We need to change our lenses a little bit different, to look at the web a little differently. Fair warning, zombie video coming up, okay? It's relevant. Shines beyond the sky, growing cold as the leaves all day. I'm more alone in a vivid dream. Help me out of the shape I'm in. After the fires, before the flood, my sweet baby, I need fresh blood. So I'm a big zombie genre fan. I don't mean to say that I know everything about it. Sorry, about it. There you go. I've been told I have a flat Canadian accent. That's not fair to you. I'll do everything I can to really bring it out. But we focus on this, right? We see the apocalypse. We see that these poor people will never recover from this plague that's upon them. And it's the majority of the world. We've lost hope, right? And so we see the tragedy, and we just look at this as the why behind all of it. The thing that I love about the zombie genre is not the zombies. It's this. It's the human reaction to it. It's how do we retain our humanity as we move forward? Because every zombie story, every zombie movie, show, it follows the same essential plot pieces, but they tell in a different way and they expose the human side of it. We used to look at the web like this, you know, not very long ago either, as different browsers on computers. Then we started to look at the web a little bit more like this, different devices with maybe different browsers. Well, this is not the web. The web is not a bunch of cogs, not a bunch of machines. It's people connecting to people. And that's the key to a responsive project and responsive discovery. we have opportunities in here. And this is what happened. They had a really fractured ecosystem at the city of Surrey, and they needed to bring it together. They had apps all over the place, built in different platforms, different patterns, different vendors. They had departments that wouldn't talk to each other. They had content authors that didn't know how to use the CMS, right? And so they didn't. And it meant for really poor content. We have the opportunity to create wholehearted experiences. So responsive discovery. There's an out-of-date resource that you could use. I have a site called responsiveprocess.com, which I'm just now getting back to updating. It's about 3 years old at this point. It's still, I think, relevant, but you can go visit that at any time after this. This is the city of Surrey. The future lives there, but it's nestled in the mountains. It's just a half-hour drive from the city of Vancouver. Everything's kind of connected there. I got a kick out of this picture. This is the future of the city of Surrey. All those buildings are fake, but you can kind of see where it sits. When we started out the project, this is what the project manager gave us. I've blurred out names and everything to protect identities on this, but we knew going in that we didn't know everything. So we had a discovery project, a design project, content strategy project that was going to need to be done in 2 months for this. It was a compressed timeline and almost felt unreasonable, but we were still excited about it. But he said to me, he looked at this and said, well, here's how it all works. And we said, well, there's probably things that are going to change right here. We don't know what those things are. He looked at me and said, that's not how Microsoft Project works. You know, and there's this moment of disconnect. Because this is the process that he wanted and the client wanted. All the things, all the superpowers, invulnerability. Truth is, when you do discovery on any project, especially a responsive one, this is the process we need. We need to be willing to bust things up, have things blowing up around us, and still manage to be the hero that they need from us. So, thinking about your message, this is where we started. I got a kick out of this. This was close. So I'm going to tell a bunch of stories that relate to this project. This is a dentist's office near my house, and they just announced that they'd gone green, paperless, with a giant piece of paper. Right? Right message, wrong way of conveying it. That's what the city of Surrey was doing. They had already 31% of their traffic was trying to access it through mobile, which is great, right? This was in 2012, and they had flash apps. It wasn't responsive. There was navigation that you couldn't use. The search was not great because there was no metadata for a lot of the content because the content authors didn't know how to use the CMS. Right? Here's a better way to tell a story. This is in Minneapolis from last year. I was going through the airport, and it was basically destroyed around me is what it felt like because I was doing renovations. But they told me why, and they regained my trust right away because they told me in the right moment at the right time. We need to think, especially in responsive situations, how our message is going to go out to different devices. And that's where Surrey was struggling. How do we communicate all these things? This is my little puppy, Neville. All right, Neville. Neville Longbottom, actually. My daughter named him. And you can see at the top here, he was sick the first month we got him. We were worried he was going to die. And I was out walking him, and he had solid poop for 4 days. For a dog owner, this is a big deal. This puppy is going to live. You know, winning. German Shorthair Pointer is the other tag. I forgot that this was also going to go to Twitter. Yeah, I didn't think about that, right? There's multi-channel things happening here. My friend Jesse, So we learn from these moments, right? We learn from them. Well, you'd think I would. Yesterday, this is in the workshop, okay? You know, really great group. It was awesome. You know, but when I walked in and out, I could smell the Sharpie fumes. So we may also be getting high on Sharpie fumes and then tagged the conference. So the really bizarre part of this, Janine was the client sponsor for the City of Surrey project, and she's the only person that responded right away. She became a good friend on that project, but it's complicated, right? We all of a sudden need to think about the priorities of our content, how it's going to be delivered, how much of it can be delivered. It gets more complicated. Starting off on a project, we need to think about the team. This is my little dog, Sloan, the first day we had her. You know, aw, yeah. You didn't say aw for my dog. Thank you. No, she is really cute. Anyways, when you first meet someone, you have this potential. We look at this puppy here and think she's going to grow up and to be this amazing dog, which she did, right? It's the same when we start to interact with our team, whether we're meeting with a new internal stakeholder, we're a vendor, we're meeting with a client. It doesn't matter. We need to get to know them. We need to know what their expectations are, what they can fit into. This was her first coat, did not fit. you know, how they interact in their work environments, what they think they want, right? So she's sitting there looking outside, just desperately wants to be outside, but I live in Vancouver where it rains a lot. So what they actually want, she wants to come back in. Their behaviors, what trouble they get themselves into, thinking about the content authoring system, what they're proud of. This is really important when you work with teams, to learn what do you love, what do you care about? You know, how they interact with each other, how they see themselves, how maybe other teams see them. Yeah. And how we can help them along on the journey. I have a blog post on this. It's called Silos Are for Farming, Not Web Design. You can check it out. It talks about interdisciplinary teams. That's what we established at the start of the Surrey project. It's not a content strategist, an IA, a user experience designer, you know, a business analyst, you know, all working independently, and then the client over here. No, we are a team. There's just one team. We're all together. It's important that we have different disciplines coming in and out all the time. I happen to lead the project, but that meant that I needed to say, hey, you're the tech lead. You need to come in and talk to us right now in the earliest discovery point, because we think these issues may come up, right? This is some of the team from there. You know, they're celebrating a bit of a moment together because they're working together. Canadian content. Working together doesn't always mean sitting together, though, because here we are. This is some of the team on the Surrey project, and actually the two people that are working on Surrey have their headphones on. We're not talking to each other at all. It's at our office in Vancouver. But you can experience moments together when you recognize your team. You can debate each other. You can, even on remote meetings, react to things. Different project, but the only other designer on the call with me is Alen here. This was her first look at the slide deck that was going to go to a client. And we can have moments as teams where I'm laughing and sending her a message, and this is her horrific face for, you know, seeing how they treated the logo. Being on a team is tricky, though. Watch your back. That was my workstation. This is the Surrey team, though. This is some of them. This is both the company I was at and another vendor and the client representatives in here. We considered ourselves the project team. There was no separation. So much so that I would go on site and work there 1 or 2 days a week. Now, I could do that because I lived 30 minutes away. But you get these amazing moments that happen. We had done a pro bono project during this for the Surrey Firefighters Association. They showed up in uniform and gave us this plaque. All right, and there's this amazing moment of, yeah, we're a team. You see us together. We still go out together. Because we need to create an environment for unplanned moments of discovery. Right, that's where true discovery starts to happen. The spaces between things. Okay, in the actual process, we need to audit all the things. This is Lynn Valley Canyon, really close to where I live, too. I love to go for hikes there. And the first time I was there, I was looking. That was a hot day, really cold mountain water. I thought, oh, this is going to be amazing. And my friends started to go down and around, even my daughter. And then I saw this sign. Warning, extreme danger. Has claimed several lives, right? If we don't look at our current situation, if we don't audit everything, meaning the apps, the content, some of the patterns that they're using, all their different content templates too, we can lose track of things. So that's an important part, especially if you're moving a project from a fixed width site or non-responsive or maybe an M.and website. You need to know where everything exists and why it exists. The next step that we took was establishing the user experience vision and design principles. You could call this the project vision. You could call it anything you want, but we need to understand why, the thing that we're headed for. So the circle that is, we're only going to reach the first edge of it. You never quite accomplish your entire vision. You keep moving towards it, but some of it has to be attainable. This is what it looked like for the city of Surrey. And I can share out this link afterwards. They want this to be public so that anybody can go in. They're still updating it. But their project vision was a best-in-class responsive municipal website that presents complex content through intuitive interactions on open text platform. It's quite a mouthful, but it's not meant to be like a public, you know, get you excited. It's meant to say, this is what we're going towards. And we we worked on all these things together. None of this was created in a vacuum. You cannot have a truly successful project if you can't collaborate. You know, you get lucky, that can happen, but I think collaboration is the key to all of this. Following that up, we did collaborative sketching. So we sat down, we talked about some of their content priorities currently, and just sketched it out in their project sponsor's office, which was next to my desk. By the way, their web team was 3 people, and it was in a trailer. So they now are in a beautiful new city hall, but I always got a kick out of that I was going to the trailer to work every day, you know, the high-tech team. We then did a content modeling exercise, a collaborative one. So we've got an audit of all the things. We have our vision, our design principles. We sat down and we started to look through how will the different content pieces fit on all the different content templates. And if there's only one thing that you remember from this presentation, it's this next little bit. This is where the aha moment happens for me on every project. And I don't mean just for me, I mean for the team. And we fight through this stuff together. So let me show you a little bit of what that looks like. This is an example from a product site. It's a rough example of what Starbucks did when they first launched. Is anyone here from Starbucks? I've never been in a room with someone from Starbucks. When Starbucks first launched their responsive site, okay? So rough wireframe type of idea. So that might be their site ID, their logo, right? Then they've got their navigation in there. Then they had this giant blob of content, an HTML blob. You know, technical term there, but you hear Karen McGrain and others talk about that. And that might be where their product information was, right? Then they had this other blob, which they called their sidebar, and then their footer, generalizations here a bit, and a call to action to buy that product, right? So you want to buy this particular coffee bean or this coffee maker, whatever it happened to be. When it was refactored, when you start to think about the small screen, this is what happened to the call to action. Because they didn't think about the priorities across different screen sizes, devices, however you want to look at it. So it's this really sad moment. Poor James. What they should have done, and they eventually did do, because a lot of people criticized them, but the truth is they put something out there, tried, and then iterated on it and fixed it. That's how the web really works, in my perspective. But they thought about chunks of content, discrete pieces, site ID, logo, navigation, page title. Some clarity or intro copy, a description of the product that's brief. Maybe the rest of the product description related things there. A discrete piece of content for the call to action. A secondary area, not a sidebar, because it's not going to be a sidebar on some devices. Don't call it that, please. And then a footer. So this call to action, because they knew the priorities of things and they had these discrete chunks of content, it wasn't lost. It was kept. It was a happy moment. Here's the thing, responsive design won't fix your content problems. Karen McGrain talked about this last year in Portland, and it's so true, right? We look at responsive design saying, well, now we can deliver this to all these devices, but if we don't understand our priorities across devices for the content, it's lost. So we're looking for this atomic piece of content, this central piece that things relate to and spin out from. So one of the things that we did with this municipality, and that I do on every project, is this content modeling exercise, which is what the workshop was on that I ran yesterday. But we take a look at all their different content templates that they exist. City of Surrey had 54 at the time. They now have 9 because they didn't need 54. There were just too many. They could put some logic and options into these. But then we prioritize those content templates. So of the 9, what is the most important one? And the one's the second most important, third, and so on. And we start with what we think is the most important. We're making some assumptions here, but it's based on what audience needs are. And then we break down all the different discrete content types that are on that particular view. So in this case, it was a standard content view. The city of Surrey knew that people were searching for very specific information. How do I pay my taxes online, right? I need a dog license. I'm just looking for this piece of information related to my property. I want to know about a particular program for my kids. About 95% of their content on their site lives in this template here. Once we took all the different elements, so site ID, logo, title, clarity copy, search, breadcrumb, social sharing, all the way down to like social channels, the links off to those, alerts, body, we then prioritize each one of them to groups 1, 2, or 3. Group 1 is essential, must have. This view cannot exist without it. We can't meet the vision for what is supposed to happen here. 2 is great to have. It will fully support it, but it's not essential. If it wasn't there, it would still work. 3 is nice to haves, right? These things that, if we can work them in, it's going to enhance it a bit, but if they disappear, people might not even notice. That's the easy part. Everything could go into group 1 if you wanted it to, but then we have to go back and prioritize everything inside each group, and we have to agree. The people that are doing this is typically, in this case, it was myself, another content strategist, and a tech lead from the company we were with. And then we had their project sponsor, their director of communications, and their IT manager, and his sort of assistant. And we workshopped through that. We brought in different departments at different times to talk through this. This was a 3-day process for us where we're locked in a room with whiteboards continually going through each thing. But because we have to fight through those things, we get a lot of moments where we're just staring at each other. and we don't really know how to move forward, and we have to come to agreement. It's not okay for someone to sit back and go, well, whatever. No, we have to fight through that. Because we chose to fight through that and did so in a positive way, people come out the other side excited about what's been produced, about the next steps. They understand the priorities. They understand how it's going to start to be represented across different screen sizes. So in this exercise, we do just a real basic sketch of at least two screen sizes, a small screen first, always do the small screen first, and then a larger screen to understand how do we represent those priorities we just talked about, like what is 1-1 and what is group 1-2, and so on an actual interface. And then we describe the different content types and we document those moving forward. I can't imagine doing projects without going through this process. And it's not earth-shattering, it's nothing like that, but it really does help us understand each other and what we need to accomplish. Now, obviously, this is really rough, and there's a lot of other breakpoints and different things that could happen, but this gives us an idea of how to move forward. By the way, priority 1-1 doesn't mean that it's the first thing on the screen. It just means that it is the most important thing on that screen. But if you start to think about different devices, like a Pebble watch that I'm wearing, how do you deliver a message on a 1.26-inch screen that's consistent with what you're delivering on a widescreen desktop? Well, maybe you send priority 1-1 and 1-2 to the watch so they can understand, and maybe they're going to access it elsewhere. There's lots of future devices we don't know about. But this is the key. A website is a black hole without its content. Nerd reference. Everyone got that one? Probably not. Thank you. Other things we did. We did phone calls. We actually talked to each other. This is also a phone. Who knew that? We explored different mental models. This is where I live, in Burnaby, which is right next door to Vancouver. This is called Manor House. And when we were first looking for places, this is generally what we saw. That's my dog. So this is after we'd moved in. But it's this ideal place that we visited, you know, on a Sunday afternoon during an open house. And then we'd come again another evening when they arranged for it. And you see sort of this perfect picture. But the truth is, we didn't really know what it was like to live there because we'd never lived there. After we moved in, about a month later in the fall, we started to see some crows appear. Just a few. And we thought, oh, okay. A week later, honestly, I couldn't see the power lines. This is the park that's right outside of our backyard. Those are all crows. 40,000 commuter crows in Vancouver that we didn't know about that fly over our house every day in the fall and spring. It's terrifying. It's just like the movie The Birds. And crows are incredibly smart. Look it up. They're supposed to have the intelligence sort of at a 12-year-old level. They can make tools. They remember your face generationally if you mess with them. They've never shit on me. That's the good news. So I'm doing okay. But we didn't really dive into the real situation. So we do things like card sorts. And I had done this with the city of Surrey in the past where we invited people to come into us to do the card sort, to think about how they think about the content and how it should be organized, their mental models around it. But the truth is, we start to see people as usernames then. Like, this is what we think the group that they belong to. So what we did in this project that was different was we went out. We started to visit people in different transit areas, libraries, and ask them to do the card sorting on iPads. We were there with them in their situations. And this is another moment of discovery because, sure, they're telling us about the organization of the information, and we have these fun moments, but we're discovering all these other things between those moments again to say, well, you know, I have to wait for my bus for 45 minutes. Right? Now, that may not apply directly to the website, but we start to learn this other information that can help us convey a better experience to them in their context. We used optimal sort for that. We then took some of that information and brought the team back into a conference room, and we started to use stickies, putting them up on the wall, moving them around, because we knew that we needed to improve both the navigation patterns and the navigation itself, but the way things were structured. It didn't make sense to internal departments, and it didn't make sense to external visitors. You know, huge problem. We then brought it into Slick Plan, because it was another collaborative tool where people could mess around with it, so to speak, where their stakeholders could share this out and say, does this make sense? And I think we, at this time, this is sort of at 4 or 5 levels deep into the site. You know, they had about 20,000 different pages of content that they were trying to organize and bring down. But again, it was collaborative. I like Slick Plan. It's never going to get me to sort of the final sitemap that I need. But for a collaborative tool, it's been brilliant for me. We also did some empathy and experience mapping. So here's my daughter again. This is where she comes back in. She's a little sassy sometimes. She's great. But she wanted to do this project where she's starting her own business last year. And it's this recycling project because she noticed that people were just throwing out their bottles, right? And because they didn't want to take the time to take them to the recycling depot. And so my wife suggested, said, why don't you collect them, Emma, and Dad can take you in every Saturday, and you can recycle them, keep the money. So she decided to do that. She was going to give 20% to the SPCA, so a charity, and give 10% back to everyone that allowed her to participate, like to collect their bottles. She went around to all her neighbors. They all agreed. None of them wanted the 10%. And so she sent me this message after she found out that, Dad, can you get me 3 big containers, Rubbermaid or recycling bins, please? What for? Mom's recycling idea. 3 people said yes so far. Cool. So you get them? Not today. I'm blue, by the way. But yes. Why not today? You out. You're out. You're out. She said all that in like seconds. Dad, be more patient, please. I'd like to measure their front steps and see what is best, what fits and looks good. Okay. I'm so excited about this. I get to do this discovery project with my daughter. So we went out. This is one of our neighbor's places, and we saw that they had a space out front for a container. Another neighbor had another space. We thought, oh, this is going to work, and we talked to them about it. Because we were basing it on our experience, what we knew. None of them wanted containers. They all said, we'll bring the bottles to you, because that's way easier for us. Turns out our part of the building is way in the back, and if you leave your bottles outside anywhere else, someone will come around and take them, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. That's actually helping that person too. But if we'd just gone out and bought the containers, we would have wasted that money. We'd be throwing away. I've been on projects like that, where we don't ask the questions early on, where we don't actually do discovery and think about how people experience things. Adaptive Path, in the last, I can't remember exactly when they revamped this and released this site, so it's mappingexperiences.com. This is a great PDF they have out that's leading up to a book, where they talk about their experience mapping, sort of an update to maybe what you've seen before. This is an example that they've blogged about a lot. You know, where you talk about the different stages that are happening here, so research planning, shopping, booking, how someone, a customer, goes through, right? And then what are they doing? You can sketch that out, you can just write it out. Sketching often works best. What are they thinking, feeling, and what's the experience like, and what are opportunities throughout that? And so this helps us think about the process that people are going through. Same as my daughter's recycling idea, we had to do that with the city of Surrey. How do you pay your taxes online? What happens if you get to an app that we can't update in time for responsive, and it's Flash? What do we do about these things? Audience profiles. We're looking for the trends. We can't speak to every single person, but we can speak to user groups. We need to understand, you know, how they represent themselves. 3 generations of Fisher there, by the way. Being willing to adapt yourself. This is another big one. So this is how I see myself, right? That I'm leading this project. I'm going to be okay. The truth is I'm clueless, and it's poor me because I don't really understand. So we had an opportunity to go and do a little bit more research on how people viewed things. This is just me selling Vancouver to you, by the way. You should definitely visit. You know, talking to different people, seeing what it is that they need, recording it, sketching collaboratively with some of the stakeholders that are out there. Because again, real discovery happens between the planned activities. So as we talked to people in transit, and they had this struggle working with the transit association there, we thought, we can help them solve this maybe. Let's go out. So we took the bus to their transit headquarters. We looked at their systems there and saw that they're using both high-tech and paper to go to the transit people. We got to drive a double-decker bus as part of this. I'm not actually driving. No driving selfies. I didn't do that. But there's this moment where we start to understand how people were accessing information online and how they were getting feedback from these drivers related to transit. The drivers that are there with the ridership, one of the primary audiences for this big service within the city, and they're completely distracted because they may hop on a bus and have to drive it immediately, and it may be a model of bus they've never driven before. The controls are in different places in every model. It's 23 tons of steel. By the way, you almost can't flip a double-decker bus, no, from experience. This is why we do this. This is from almost a year ago, about 9-10 months. This is Android devices. So here we have the Android version and then the screen size. As you can scroll down, and I keep going here, you can see that every combination is just a little bit different as we keep going. If you want to see the problem we're going to experience, look at the scroll bar, right? I need to get going a little bit faster here on this, but there's all these different devices. At that time, there was about 700 different devices, Android alone, right? So we used to try to design for devices, think about screen sizes, but We're in this position where I don't believe you can have static wireframes anymore that are truly accurate, right? Because we're overwhelmed with all these things. So for the city of Surrey and for every project moving forward, we had all of our wireframes in the browser. I'd still use OmniGraffle and other tools like that occasionally to get out some quick sketches, but honestly, using pattern libraries and things like Foundation or Bootstrap or whatever you want to, you can get these out even quicker. And you have more aha moments because we can iterate on them together with the client, but they can bring them into their devices and see, oh, that's how the navigation pattern will work. I get that now. Oh, by the way, the annotations came from the content modeling exercise, so they just carry forward. It's this lean process. We then took to do in-browser designs. So this is what they had, and this site, honestly, had worked quite well for them. It had some issues, for sure, a little bit dated, but they just wanted to do a refresh of it. They did not want to redesign it. They didn't have budget or time for that, and also they were afraid of internal stakeholders losing it. So it was a simple update. This is actually a design prototype, I would call it, where we used real content and brought it in, real imagery from the city of Surrey, and actually allowed them to play with it there, because you learn different things once you're in the browser. How do the navigation patterns actually work? What does it feel like to have real content that will need to go three lines in the navigation, right? Like this. How do we accommodate that? What if their logo is, you know, text-based? What can we have next to it? How do we navigate through the site and do our wayfinding? Again, static comps just couldn't do it for them. They just didn't have those aha moments. That doesn't mean we're designing everything in the browser. We still are using things like Photoshop and other tools, but we're showing them all the designs in the browser. Right? That's where the actual iteration and no reveals, but that's where they see them. And celebrating your successes together. It's really hard on these projects because sometimes it can take a long time, sometimes it doesn't. But if we are all one team, we need to come together and celebrate. So this is when the site, the refresh, launched. The real team, client, and vendor there together as one team. Here's the key, though. Don't stop discovering. I hope some of you get this reference. We keep going, right? Because they had to launch this municipal site for however many people are going to use it, all these different content authors, and we couldn't do everything. There were so many apps that were built in a very restrictive way or owned by third parties that we needed to then come in, do another discovery session, prioritize things, and move forward. How do we get the content authors on board with all of this? They were involved in some of the process, but we did lunch and learns. We sat down and took them through some of the things that you're seeing now, where they come into sort of a comfortable, friendly environment and learn about it. We also created this workflow for them to understand how do they create a new piece of content? Where do they fit in? Because they didn't really understand that. It wasn't even just that they didn't know how to use the CMS. They didn't know where things were or who it should go to next. So there's this process now, or process if you're from here, that helped them understand where to go, who to talk to, how to get more information. This transformed how their departments talk to each other. Because they had to produce new content or revise their content for this project because they were delivering it to all these different screen sizes, so to speak. And it actually surprised me. I didn't think that this part would be another one of those transformative moments. But understanding how you're going to author content for a responsive project is really important. And knowing where you fit into the puzzle, right? So teams now understood that if I'm from economic development, and I need to do this thing, and Parks and Rec is over here, maybe we can talk together about this. So collaboration is the key. There is only one team on any project, especially a responsive one. Thanks. We got actually a few minutes left for Q&A if you want to do that. I know I covered a lot of things here. Does anybody have any questions?
So you document yourself very well. Is there some sort of plan? Like, you have a routine for documentation? Is it just a habit you have naturally? And related to that, how did you perfect your open mouth smile?
That was one take. Documentation, yeah, I think it is really important. I actually look at it like lean documentation, though. For example, I used to do wireframes in OmniGraffle, things like that. I would annotate absolutely everything, and hardly anyone would read that. So for me, it's any time that there's anything actionable, so someone in the future will need to take action on it or will need to have an understanding of it. It gets documented right then. I do all of it in Google Docs initially, right? Because it's a great collaborative tool. The Openmost Smile, it just comes naturally. So I actually whitened my teeth on that with Photoshop, though. Embarrassing moment. Got time for a couple more questions.
Hi, quick question. You used a term, wholehearted experience.
Yeah.
Can you define that?
I should be able to. That's my whole company's thing. Brené Brown did its TED Talk, right? And she talks about things being wholehearted and how she used to look at data as data. And now she sees data as stories with a soul, right? That there's this connection. When we look at experiences, it's not just, how does this person get there? It's like, what are they going to feel when they get there? How does this connect with their head and the heart? So when I think about wholehearted experiences, is that connecting to the head and the heart. It's a still pretty vague definition, but
I was really interested in the content modeling piece of what you were saying, and right. Then I was thinking the question, and then you dove into all the research you did, and what I was thinking is you did a lot of collaborative activity around how you prioritize, and that's super interesting to me. Did you do any of that same kind of activity in the field, not just card sorting, but like the prioritization of the content, and like how much did research feed into how you prioritize those things?
As much as we could get, right? So this one, it was a rapid time frame. So the company that I was with at the time had been working with Surrey for 2 years already. We had an existing relationship, advantage us. So we had all this analytics and some anecdotal information from them that they fed into us. So we got everything they could give us, but then we went out and confirmed their audience profiles that they had to say, hey, you said that these are really important. Let's go talk to people. So we did that. We had a complete content inventory of all 20,000 plus pages. They have an automated tool that brings in real high quality content audits, which unfortunately is not available publicly. And so there was a lot of that existing research and then new research that fed into how do we set priorities, because it was all based on what the audience and the business needed at that time, or organization, I guess. Okay, one more question, and then I think we're going to have to wrap up.
You mentioned that you prioritize content through card sorts and whiteboarding. Have you ever had any experiences where you had trouble getting stakeholders to kind of buy into that process? And if so, how would you get around that?
Yes. I always do kind of a mini presentation on what the end result could be and why we're doing certain things. But if I'm completely honest, there's also moments in the project where I just say, hey, you know what, we're going to do this activity, you need to plan for it, even though we weren't totally clear on what we're going to do at this stage, and we lead them into it. It sounds deceptive, and it maybe is, but as soon as they begin to participate, they get it, though, right? I haven't found it hard to sell, because it's not an extremely expensive thing to do. Say, I need 2 to 3 days of your time. That's it, right? In the scope of a project this big, that was almost nothing. And if it's a smaller project, I may say, I need a day of your time. What really helps sell it, I guess, is to say, you're going to see some early sketches of the interface. Like, oh, I get to see something, great. All right, but that's just the last little bit that we do. So I hope that activities like this, where we actually focus more and more on the why, which, you know, this audience, this conference, I think is really about, will help transform how we talk about things. The more that we blog about this, share about this, talk about our processes, the more our clients, our teams, our internal stakeholders will hear about and understand, right? That's why I created responsiveprocess.com, so that I could share what I was doing at the time, right? And I'm hoping to make it like a bit more of a community platform thing so that more people can share there. But thanks very much. If you're in the coffee mood, give yourselves a hand. No.
The 2014 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by UIE's All You Can Learn. UIE's All You Can Learn will give you the skills and techniques you need for a competitive design advantage with 24/7 access to UX experts and topics. For more information, visit aycl.uie.com. That's aycl.uie.com. As always, thank you for listening.